Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
We're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
All right, welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. This is Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. Enjoying the weather's picking up. We're coming up to the infamous 420, and that means a big weekend for movies. Looking forward to what's going to be coming out that weekend and then the following weekend as well. So we're at a great time at the beginning of summer for the cinema.
Yeah. I'm definitely excited, and I actually went to the theater today and saw A Quiet Place, and have to say, highly recommend it. That movie was awesome. Very, very well done. And I was kind of worried about it because of the lack of dialogue, but the way that they do it, it doesn't come off like, to me, it didn't come off as like slow playing or boring. Like it had, like, to the point where like I was afraid to chew anything in the theater. I didn't want to make too much noise because it was just so quiet.
That's what I've read. I've read other people that have said the same thing too. Like, people were afraid to be opening candy wrappers and slurping on soda. I heard it's definitely an experience.
Yes, I would definitely take a look at that. Rampage is out with The Rock. We've got Super Troopers 2 coming up in just a couple days. And yeah, I'm excited to see the sequel. I mean, it's been 16 years. Actually, probably 17 since they actually made it. And I'm excited to go watch it sometime, probably early next week or over the weekend. Now, I don't have a lot on the agenda, and we're probably going to just dive into things pretty quick for Super Troopers. But, you know, JD, anything going on with you this weekend? You got any big plans?
Big plans? No. I mean, the Nationals just had a long streak of home games, so I got to go check out my first game of the season, so it was a lot of fun to see them get their asses kicked by the Rockies.
Oh, nice.
But other than that, I'm just looking forward to the weather improving. I need to get myself to go see A Quiet Place, because that's been on my list for a while, and I appreciate your recommendation, and mentally preparing for both Super Troopers 2 and then Infinity War. I would ideally like to watch all the Marvel movies between now and then, but that's probably physically impossible.
That would be tough to get them all in. The only thing I will say about A Quiet Place is that just because I've watched The Office recently, I did have a little bit of an issue taking John Krasinski seriously. Every time he popped up, I wanted to be like, Fad Halpert. Whoa, boner! Just, I can't help myself. Hey, I want to do a quick plug here, social media, because we never do that on this podcast. Go over right now at Back in Time Pod. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram. I want to thank you guys for voting on our poll topic last week for John Candy. And it looks like we're going to be bringing you Uncle Buck next week. JD, how excited are you to get into some Uncle Buck?
My name is Uncle Buck, and I'm here to... wrong movie. Uncle Buck is a classic, man. I'm very thankful to our fans and our listeners for voting, for chiming in, and for picking the movie that I wanted to win. Little surprised at the lack of love for Brewster's Millions, but you will not be disappointed with our review and rundown of Uncle Buck.
I mean, if you were upset about Brewster's Millions, hopefully you weren't pulling for Canadian bacon. They got no love. You know, I am looking forward to Uncle Buck, though. I think that's going to be a great movie for us to get into, and... I think that's going to be a great movie for us to get into. And I think it's a underrated movie as far as not only the writing, but just the heart of the movie. And I like the story, and I look forward to us diving into that deep.
And of course, it is pretty much technically a prequel to Home Alone.
It's hard to argue that. You bring a good point.
And giant pancakes. What is the biggest pancake you've ever made?
That's a good question. I mean, probably like the size of a plate.
I would say the same for me, plate sized. I don't think I've ever tried bigger.
Are you a plain pancake guy, or do you like to throw some chocolate chips or blueberries in there?
I appreciate fruit on my pancake. I gotta say, I don't really understand or get chocolate chip pancakes. It just seems like sometimes the chips melt, sometimes they don't. You get a hard bite, you get a gooey bite. Like, I don't get it. Blueberries, strawberries, bananas, yeah, I can do. But overall, yeah, plain pancakes for me.
Yeah, I'm typically plain pancakes. Give me a short stack, dry. You put butter on it, I send it back.
Really?
I send it back.
Wait, so you don't do syrup? You take it dry?
No, I'll put the syrup on there, but they put a stick of butter on it and then hand it to me. I am pissed off.
Okay, so you at least lube your pancakes before stuffing them down your throat.
Oh, yeah, lots of syrup. Okay,
great, fantastic. That's all I'm asking.
It's exactly why I have diabetes. Wait, I shouldn't joke about that. I don't have it yet.
I thought you were going to make a powdered sugar joke. But that didn't happen.
It's powdered sugar. How's the view from sugar heaven, bitch?
Powdered sugar, and it's delicious.
Yeah. We will definitely talk some sugar heaven as we get into Super Troopers. You know, coming down the pipeline, just to give you guys an idea of what we're doing. So next week will be Uncle Buck. The week after that, we've got the original American Pie, and excited to get into that. And then to round out the month, we've got a favorite of JD's, is we are heading to Sleepaway Camp to discuss the 1980s slasher film. JD, could you be any more excited for Sleepaway Camp?
I am nervous. I am excited. It's reviewing this movie is going to be like the first night at Sleepaway Camp. You know, you're horny, you're excited, you're scared. I mean, you're missing your parents. It's just it's a weird time in a young man's life.
All right. Well, yeah. So that'll be coming down the pipeline. Thank you guys, as always, for hitting the download button on today's podcast. And we're going to dive into some Super Troopers here. So Super Troopers is a 2001 American crime comedy film directed by J. Chandra Sekhar. I'm hoping to get that name right. Written by and starring the Broken Lizard comedy group, which has J. Chandra Sekhar, Kevin Heffernan, Steve Lemmy, Paul Soder, and Eric Stolhansky. The film also co-stars Brian Cox, and Linda Carter has a cameo appearance as well. In total, Fox Searchlight paid $3.25 million for distribution rights to the film, and the film would gross over $23 million at the box office. A sequel, Super Troopers 2, has finished production and will be released on April 20th, 2018. So that's the background on Super Troopers. And I've got a bunch of interesting facts and stuff I'm going to get into, but one of the things that I found out was Super Troopers won an award. JD, does that surprise you at all that Super Troopers was award-winning?
I mean, yes and no. Often the time with, you know, comedy movies of this caliber, they're overlooked for a lot of the production value or acting or music or, you know, a lot of where the money actually goes to create something to make the money back. So, yeah, I guess I am a little surprised and I'm curious to know where this award was shoved.
It's definitely a bullshit award. No offense to Super Troopers, guys. But they won an audience award at the South by Southwest Film Competition. And it was a three-way tie between Wave Twisters and then quite possibly the best cinema film name ever, Lady Porn. Let that sink in for a second. What do you think that movie's about?
It's either about Lady Porn or Lady Porn. Right, you have to imagine I was wearing a mustache for the second one.
Ooh, mustache ride. I like it. I've got, let's jump into some interesting facts here. And I've got some stuff from the comedy group as well. So Broken Lizard member Steve Lemmy stated that the idea for the film came from road tripping to various weddings in his friend and fellow Broken Lizard member J. Chandra Sekhar's car, and frequently getting pulled over by the cops. As they were frequently under the influence of drugs, the gang began to wonder what would happen if the cops were A, aware of the situation, and B, had a sense of humor about it, theorizing that if they did, that they could have fucked with us so much. What do you think about that, JD?
It's an interesting origin for the concept that they came up with. And like, I could see how that plays out throughout the whole movie. Like that's fun. I like when stuff like that comes organically from life experience.
In the scene where Rabbit is stuffed in a locker covered in shaving cream, he's actually covered in menthol shaving cream. The crew was unaware at the time that menthol burns your skin if left on for too long. So after the scene, Eric Stolhansky was sent next door to a firehouse to get hosed off. JD, have you ever left the shaving cream on too long?
No, I usually leave the lotion on the skin to make it nice and soft, but not the shaving cream. I've never experienced that, but I've never been stuffed in a locker either. So this seems like a unique problem that they sort of stumbled upon organically. And now people in the future will know not to make this mistake.
I think I could get you to do it. I think if I drop a double dog or a triple dog dare, I could get you to leave the shaving cream on.
How long are we talking here? Like
30 minutes.
Just on my arm?
Eh, we'd have to like cover your whole arm.
Yeah, you're right. You could probably get me to do that.
I will buy you one large big gulp. Done. $1.10. The film was originally supposed to be set in the 1970s. How different of a movie would this be if they were rocking bell bottoms and driving 1970s police cars?
I think a lot of the movie is like devoid of technology anyway, so you can say it could transfer over. You know, a lot of the comedies, you know, there's a lot of slap shtick and physical comedy in it that I think they could have made it work.
That's a good point about the technology. They're really, you're right. Watching it back, there's very little technology used. And they must have really liked that idea, because I know when there was talks of the sequel that first started up, that was one of the things they were going to do, was a prequel taking place in like the 70s. So they've definitely thought about this a couple of times, but they never pulled the trigger on the idea. Who knows? In the cat game, the word meow was actually said 11 times. This is something I've always noticed because I always counted them for some reason on my hand. JD, had you ever noticed the cat game goes more than 10 times like they say?
I always felt like there was some sort of discrepancy in that, because obviously everyone counts. Like after the first time that you see the movie, then you're like the second time, you're like, oh, I got to count. Yeah. So it is 11 times. So he screws him.
The couple that Farva says chicken fucker to are actually Kevin Heffernan's parents. They knew he was going to say something rude, but they weren't prepared at all for the chicken fucker line. How awesome is that?
Yeah, I feel like most parents are prepared for their children to say rude things, but you're never prepared for chicken fucker.
No. I want to go back now and watch that scene again just to see like their real reaction. More than 20 drafts were written of this screenplay. Kevin Heffernan estimated the group wrote more than 20 drafts of the script, with more jokes added every time. We try to do one joke every 6 seconds. From a script writing perspective, I should say. JD, what do you think about that? 20 different drafts.
It sounds a little like that's a lot of drafts, but I mean, that's really kind of typical with the rewrite process. And especially if they're looking to plug a joke in every 6 seconds, you have to take your draft and then look at it from top to bottom, reread every single page, and essentially rewrite a new draft to punch it up. Like there's always an opportunity to punch it up. And I've said before in the teaser trailer, I think they did a pretty decent job of creating both a funny and engaging story. So it's good to hear that they put in the work in the writing of this movie.
A little bit of casting here. Brian Cox, who is widely known for his work with the Royal Shakespeare Company, actually asked the Broken Lizard Group to appear in the film. The director, Jay Chandrasekhar, told the AV Club he actually called us. He said he was always playing parts like pedophiles and Nazi generals and nasty people. And he's a huge Jerry Lewis fan and thinks he's got the bone in him. And he's looking for a comedy to do and kept contacting us. And he turned out to be amazing. I thought that was really interesting. I didn't picture Brian Cox asking them to be in a movie of a bunch of guys that were pretty much unknown at that time.
Yeah, but I could see him physically. Like, I can picture the conversation, and if I could do a Brian Cox impression, I would. I can't, so you have to use your imagination of him being like, come on! Let me end this movie! See, I can't do a good Brian
Cox. Oh, hell! Give me the bar of soap!
Yeah, that was better. You had a better one.
Yeah, he's got a lot of gravel. Yeah, I bet he smoked a lot.
He's a good actor, too, and I would be curious to how, you know, the production team in Rushmore got him into that movie, because they were pretty young and relatively unknown, Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson and all them. They didn't have much clout to pull down Brian Cox, you know?
Yeah. So the opening scene was based in reality. The college kid who was forced to eat the drugs to get rid of evidence came straight out of the lives of some of the Broken Lizard guys. Border guards at the U.S.-Canada border found a joint in their Winnebago, and when they were asked to step out of the vehicle, one friend ate a stash of mushrooms meant for 10 guys, and he ended up tripping for 2 days straight. First of all, that's an awesome story. But how do you like the fact that that's a real story? It actually happened, yeah.
Dude, I love that that's a real story, and it makes me feel like I've missed out on a lot of fun times in my life. Yeah, you know, eating enough for 10 people and tripping for 2 days. My stepdad tells a story one time about a guy who accidentally did 4 hits of acid.
Bad idea.
And that guy apparently tripped for like 8 days. So, you know, props to all of you people out there that are overdoing it in a safe, contained manner.
Last one here. The original idea for the sequel was set in the 1970s. We talked about that already. But they decided to just make a true sequel. And what happened is they started a crowdfunding and ended up raising $4.5 million on Indiegogo, which at the time was a record for the highest funded film in the crowdfunding website's history. I thought that was awesome. I did not participate in the crowdfunding. I do regret it a little bit, but at the time, money was a little tight, and I just couldn't pony up the dough to buy a t-shirt and support the guys. I feel bad about it, but what can you do? JD, any thoughts on that?
Well, you are supporting the team by going to see the movie in theaters, and you're still donating your money in exchange for their work. So I give you props still.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That is going to wrap it up for Interesting Facts. Now, we were going to be back on the other side with a quick bathroom break, a word from a sponsor, and then a clip from Super Troopers. We'll see you in a minute.
Wait a minute, what are you doing, Don?
I need fuel.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Phantom Dark Dave, and I want to tell you about my new show, Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. So everybody knows me as a horror buff, but did you know I like so many different things? I like science fiction, comic books, cartoons. What better way than to express myself than a podcast that can pretty much talk about anything? You're going to have interviews, run-throughs, general conversations. So if you want to do something a little out of the ordinary and have something interesting all in the same, come check me out, Dave's Pop Culture Podcast.
You want to know why I pulled you over? Littering.
Oh, officer, that's not ours.
Candy bars.
Littering and smoking the reefer.
So the film begins, Vermont, somewhere near the border. We have 3 guys in a car driving down the highway. They're smoking pot in the car as the cops are driving. They pull up alongside them. They tell Mike in the backseat to eat all the pot. And then while he's at it, eat the shrooms as well. They try to get him to eat one more bag and he says no, and they have to ditch it out the window. The cops slam the brakes and turn on the sirens, and they think they're about to get pulled over when the cop car goes racing past them with the sirens on. So they pull off on the side of the road, and the passenger side college boy, as they're actually billed just as College Boy 1, 2, and 3, says, "Hey man, do you really eat all those bags? There must have been like $100 worth of pot and like $30 worth of shrooms. So, you know, I'm going to need that $130 whenever you get a chance." And the guy in the back's just like, "Fuck, man. JD, any thoughts on that opening sequence here in College Boy number three eating $130 worth of drugs?
It makes you remember college very fondly, to where $130 is kind of like, well, shit, break my leg. There's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah, might as well
where the hell am I going to find that kind of money?
Now, the guy in the back seat is maybe best known as the husband for Christina Hendricks. Did you know that?
I did know that, obviously not until years later, until I got into Mad Men and, you know, learned who Christina Hendricks was. But I also think he does a pretty great job in the movie The Ringer with Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah, I like him in that. The guys hear the police siren and it's right behind them again. So they thought the cop car was gone, but now it's right behind him. And let's listen to a clip here of Thorny and Rabbit. And they're kind of interrogating the guys in the car here.
Here they come, here they come.
I'll lick on it, just lick it or something. All right.
We go.
License and registration.
Officer, I know that...
License and registration, please.
It's to registration.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65. 63. Officer, isn't the speed limit 65?
Yeah, it is. Where are you boys headed?
Canada. Canada? We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine. Canada, huh? Almost made it. Are you okay?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, sir?
Yes, sir.
Now, did you say yes, sir?
I think he said, yeah, sure.
What'd you say, man?
Well, I said, yeah, sure, but literally what I said was, yeah, sure, sir.
So you are okay, then?
Yes, sir.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
Now hand over that registration.
Yes, sir. My mother's gonna kill me.
So, JD, what do you think of this scene here with Thorny and Rabbit? Meeting two of our characters for the first time.
Whether this is the first time that you're seeing this movie or this is on your regular rotation, like, this is a classic scene of just seeing who these officers are, and it throws you off because you're like, oh, how fast were you going? 65, 64. So we weren't speeding. So it's very confusing and it's very unsettling. Like, you're just kind of like, okay, where's this going? Like, they're clearly being effed with, but to what level, to what extent? And we know, you know, being that we are in the car, that dude has eaten bags of shrooms, that they're up to no good. But the cops don't technically know that.
Right.
But they're still willing to play. So much fun.
So the cop car pulls away, and they think they're about to get away with everything when the cop car screeches on the brakes and starts going in reverse as fast as it can. It pulls over behind them, and you hear Thorny on the microphone saying, pull the vehicle over. College boy was, I'm already pulled over. I can't pull over any further. And the guy next to him is like, he's pulled over. He can't go any further. And then they get out, and they start asking the same questions again. How fast were you going? 65, 64. And then... the guy in the back, now tripping balls, is like, I'm freaking out, man.
Candy bars.
I love it. I love this scene here. And then Thorny finally is like, pulls out the bag of weed. And he's like, they pulled you over for littering and smoking the reefer. And he tells the boys to teach them a lesson. He's going to have them get out of the car and smoke the whole bag. Before we get to the next part of the scene here, JD, what'd you think of a classic repeater?
Dude, it's such a, yeah, it's a classic repeater. Some great quotable lines, littering and, littering and, littering and. And I love it when Rabbit's like, you are freaking out, man. Like, it's just so, it's hilarious. Like, it really sets them up and it lets them as a comedy troupe sort of stretch their legs. And then our druggies get bonked. Momentarily, of course. Go on, Kyle.
So as they're about ready to get out of the car, a car zooms past and yells, fucking pigs! And Thorny looks up and says, Mother of God. So we're in a high-speed chase next. We see behind the headshot of Farva. And then we also have Foster, who's been out fishing while on duty. And I love the fact that sitting in the car, he has a blown up cop doll and he's just pretending to be taking the speeding tickets here. As the getaway car comes by, we see Foster's dummy sticking out of the window. So it drives by and takes the head off of him. The college boys are in the back of the car screaming for their life while the race continues. They pull up to a bar and the guy gets out, runs in. And as the cops come in pulling their weapon, Mac pulls off his wig and says, "Three tings." Mac asks if they want some shots, and they say, "Yeah, sure." And so he pours four shots and then downs them all, says, "Sorry, you guys are on duty." Farva radios in, asks if they need assistance. Thorny tells them they're fine. Mac comes running out of the bar after we hear some gunshots, and he shuts the door and says, "You boys like Mexico? Yeehaw!" And he starts flooring the car, and it goes in circles, and then we see the Super Troopers come up on the screen, and we have the title. That's the end of the opening scene. JD, final thoughts?
I can understand why a lot of people saw this movie when it came out and thought law enforcement is the field to go into. I would love to see a study that correlates the amount of people that enrolled into law enforcement programs after this movie came out, because I guarantee there was a spike. Like, this is, they're living the life. This is fantastic. I want this.
Oh, absolutely. So next, the guys are at breakfast, and we see 1, 2, 3, do it. Rabbit and Thorny are chugging bottles of syrup. Thorny wins, and he tells Rabbit, "You know, you're doing it all wrong. You got to relax. Loosen the jaw. Don't forget to cup the bowls." Max says, "You're never going to win with those thin little bird lips." At the coffee bar, Ursula has gotten her pancakes. She asked for syrup from the waitress. She says, "Sorry, we're all out." And Ursula looks back at the table and sees the empty bottles of syrup. She says, "Why can't they just chug ketchup?" Foster says, "Well, it's a good thing you didn't order the hash browns because of the catsup." What do you think of this awkward scene here with Foster and Ursula and the syrup chugging?
Dude, Foster is so effing awkward, right? Like, right, I didn't pick up, like, he's just the worst. He can't hold a conversation. He can't say stuff. He can't police. He can't grow a mustache.
He's basically the Charlie Conway of Super Troopers.
Oh, you just blew my mind.
And also, what the heck is catsup?
It's like ketchup, but stupid.
But made out of cats?
No, still made out of tomato. Just, I think it just doesn't have like all of the sugar and processed crap. It was like
organic ketchup.
I think it was more like, you know, Great Depression ketchup.
Thorny and Rabbit walk past the Spurberry police. The captain turns around and says, "Ah, waiter, I'll have the enchilada platter with 2 tacos and guacamole." And the guy next to him says, "Yeah, chief, I'll have a chinchilla." And he thinks that's the funniest thing ever. Rabbit says, "What are they talking about?" Thorny says, "They think I'm Mexican." Rabbit's like, "You're not?" Rando makes a comment, and Mac hits him in the head with one of the bottles of syrup. And he warns him to sit down and then hits him with a second bottle. And they start fighting. And then Chief O'Hagan enters and tells everybody, "Hey, hey, hey, knock it off." And he apologizes and says, "When these boys get that syrup in them, they get all antsy in their pantsy." JD, thoughts on the first interaction here between State Patrol and the Spurberry Police?
You got to have an enemy in a movie, and we have just met our enemies, and they're kind of assholes to think that they would just racially discriminate like that and to do so like so horribly. "They think I'm Mexican." "You're not?" That line gets me every single time because I fully believe Rabbit's mind is just blown. Simpler times, our younger listeners, 2001, simpler times.
Next, Rabbit is singing a song. He finishes and Farva enters. "Oh, did I miss it? Sing it again, rookie biatch." Farva sits down and Chief O'Hagan points his gun at the table towards Farva and tells him he forgot the coffee. JD, first thoughts on Farva here.
I have entered many a room and said, "Sing it again, rookie biatch." Farva's the kind of character that really grows on you in a very negative way. You don't like him at first, but as the movie goes on, you really just get annoyed with him. And he's that guy that like hangs out outside the friend circle and tries to chime in. Like, but no, at first you're just kind of like, oh, it's his cheeky shenanigans.
Yeah. Shenanigans. O'Hagan tells the boys if they don't start getting their numbers up, they're going to get shut down. So we need to step it up. Farva pokes his head in. Hey, who wants cream? Nobody? Nobody? Okay, no cream. Chief asks Foster how many tickets he's issued in the last month, and we find out he's only had 3. O'Hagan recommends he try hiding. Farva enters with the coffee. One of the cups says stupid rookie on it. And Rabbit says, oh, look, a bar of soap. Farva laughs. I got you good, you fucker. Mac says, yeah, awesome prank, Farva. Better than the crap you pull, Mac. O'Hagan starts talking, and as he's talking, Mac keeps saying, hey, bite it, Rook. Make him look like a dick. Come on. O'Hagan finally snaps and says, oh, hell, give me the bar of soap. He takes a bite and spits it out, and then tells them that they're state patrol, and they need to do their job. That's the end of the scene here. I love the bar of soap. O'Hagan actually biting it and spitting it out. What'd you think of this scene?
And I always want to try to take a bite out of coffee soap. I know it sounds a little weird, but I'm like really, really happy that he does that, you know, and like shoves it right back into Farva's face. Somebody had to, like, cause come on. I mean, seriously, if you did that to somebody at your work and you're like, hey, let me get you a cup of coffee, and you dropped a bar of soap in it, that's a baller move.
Right.
That takes some testicles to do.
I kind of want to try and pull that next time I have like a company meeting. Like, you guys want some coffee? And then just come in with the stupid rookie one. Because we actually have guys that are like, you know, we're like a sales team. So there are rookies on the team. So that I think that joke would play.
And you know, hopefully your boss would be like, oh, hell, give it to me. And then he would bite it and he'd make you look like an asshole.
Perfect. Next, on the highway, a Spurberry police officer has a car pulled over. Mac pulls up alongside and says, hey, did you forget what color your car is? And the cop doesn't say anything. He just rolls up his window and drives off. Mac pulls up behind the car and he wants to know what game they should play. He says, how about the cat game? The record is 6. Thorny did that. I think you can do 10, though. So let's listen to Foster here and the famous meow scene here.
Sorry about that.
All right, ma'am. Hand over your license and registration. Your registration? Hurry up, ma'am.
Sorry.
Is there something funny here, boy?
No.
Well, then why are you laughing, Mr. Larry Johnson? All right, ma'am, where were we?
I'm sorry, are you saying meow?
Am I saying meow?
I thought you...
Don't think, boy. Meow, do you know how fast you were going? Meow, what is so damn funny?
I could have sworn you said meow.
Do I look like a cat to you, boy? Am I jumping around all nimbly-bimbly from tree to tree?
No.
Am I drinking milk from a saucer?
No.
Well, do you see me eating mice? Hey, you stop laughing right now.
Yes.
Meow, I'm gonna have to give you a ticket on this.
But...
No buts, meow. That's the law. Not so funny, meow, is it? Meow!
All right, so JD, what did you think of the meow scene here?
First of all, dude in the car's name is Larry Johnson. Have we talked about that yet?
Not yet.
And I know it's Jim Gaffigan, right?
Yes.
So, you know, the famous Jim Gaffigan is playing the part of the famous grandmama, Charlotte Hornets, legendary basketball player, Larry Johnson. And I will that scene lives in infamy because of that for me. I just die because his name is Larry Johnson.
I love that scene. And this is going to really piss you off. I did have the Larry Johnson shoes.
Larry Johnson had awesome. Shoes?
He had a really sweet pair of black and turquoise Converse.
Of course you had those. Of course.
And they had like two straps that went over. They were awesome. I love those shoes.
And that'll do it for today's show. For JD and Kyle, Kyle, go eat a bar of soap and die. We'll see you guys later.
Hey, better than the shit you pull.
Son of a bitch with your freaking basketball shoes. Was there anything you didn't have?
No, I didn't get my first Fiari until I got into high school.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to give you? I'm going to give you your first missing tooth. Yeah, what about that? Let's see you bite a bar of soap then.
So inside the garage, Rabbit is washing a car. Farva walks up behind him and says, "Ooh-wee-oo, thanks for washing my car, Rook." He asks Rabbit what this is. Rabbit says, "It's a chamois cloth." "Well, it looks like I just lost a buck to myself." Farva grabs the cloth and wipes his hands, but it's full of oil. Rabbit smirks, and Farva says, "Oh, you think that's funny?" And Rabbit does, and then he mentions that he also heard something funny about how Farva was suspended. Something about a school bus full of kids. Farva says, "Let me tell you another funny story, New Jack. Back in 1974, the great Charlie Rich was named Country Music Musician of the Year. Then in 1975, he had to hand the award over to the new winner. You know who that was? Mr. Sunshine on My Goddamn Shoulders, John Denver." Farva says, "I'll be damned if Mr. Rich didn't pull out his cigarette lighter and light that ward on fire in front of everyone. You get it?" Rabbit says, "So you're saying you're going to light my country music award on fire?" And Farva says, "I'm saying when my suspension over, you better watch your ass. Or you'll light my ass on fire." Farva lights his cassette tape on fire, and then they get nose to nose and have a little face-off. Thorny comes in to break it up and says they got a 1092. He teases that Farva can go, and then slides across the hood and falls on the ground, and then compliments the Rook on the wax job. And Rabbit says thank you, and then sprays the hose in Farva's face and shuts the door. What'd you think of this scene here? I know it's kind of a long one, but Farva is just so awkward. I love this scene.
He really comes out of the gate, and so we've seen now a second face to Farva in his character, and we get to see some great evolution to Rabbit, and he doesn't back down. I think he's not your traditional Rook. He's not taking bullshit from anyone. And it creates, like, we got two characters, and both of them are pretty strong-willed. Granted, Farva's stupid. He doesn't come across as very intelligent, where I think Rabbit probably is intelligent. He just seems more normal, if anything. And I don't know, it's like, to quote the movie Dodgeball, it's like watching two retards try to hump a doorknob. But it's hilarious. It's a great back and forth.
Next, they pull up to a mobile Winnebago. Rabbit comments that his uncle used to have one. Thorny tells him to put his game face on, so he lowers down his little Mount Me hat. They enter. Two of the Spurberry cops are in there, Chief Grady and Officer Rando. Grady tells them to take a hike. They got it covered. Rabbit comments on the Johnny Chimpo tattoo on the girl's shoulder. We'll talk more about Johnny Chimpo later on. Rando tells him, "Hands off, rodent." They start arguing, and then the back room door starts shaking. Grady says, "This is the Spurberry police. Come out with your hands up." The door opens and a hog comes charging out, and they all quickly exit. Mac pulls up next and says, "Sounds like y'all got a hog problem." He's angry. He enters the Winnebago. Thorny tells Grady to back off. He's serious. Grady says, "Aren't you shut down? Or wait, that's next week." And they start arguing again, and then a fight breaks out between the cops. And in the next scene, they're all sitting on the ground. Most of them are in handcuffs. And Ursula and Thorny are, you know, like picking dodgeball teams here. Thorny says, "I'll trade you the fat guy for Foster. And how about the stupid looking guy for Rabbit?" Ursula says, "So you're going to have to be more specific. They're both pretty fat and stupid." Thorny backs off and eventually says, "Fuck it. You guys deal with the hog." And they leave the crime scene here. And JD, what did you think of this scene?
I love the comment that you made earlier saying that their goal was to have a joke every 6 seconds, because we just left a comedy scene and we're right into another comedy scene. But this is a pivotal scene that, you know, pushes the story forward. Like you mentioned, Johnny Chimpo is going to come into play massively later. But we get great character development. We see Ursula, you know, taking the lead. She's one of the only people left standing. So we know she's tough, she's strong, she's smart, she's resourceful. Whatever entanglement she gets into later, you know, we can discuss that as it comes. But, you know, it's really kind of like a very clean scene. And it's funny. And the damn hog. And you know, did you know there was a dead body in there? So many quotable parts.
So the next scene here, O'Hagan enters the locker room and he's pissed at Thorny. And he wants Thorny to take control out there. He says, "Christ, we look like a bunch of pussies." And he storms out of the locker room. And Rabbit comes out of the locker and he's completely covered in shaving cream. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous to the whole you wanting to test that method out to see if it actually does burn, but he seems like he's in good shape overall.
Yeah, and he got slapped in the ass with a towel. I mean, he's all right.
Have you ever, like when you were shaving, accidentally put on too much shaving cream and then like sniffed it a little bit? And then, like, your nose tickles for, like, 30 minutes?
No. But clearly you have.
I just say, I kind of imagine that's what he's going through right now, minus the horrible burning.
Yeah. At the baseball diamond next, Thorny and his hippie girlfriend are talking. Thorn's son, Arlo, is up to bat. Officer Rando's son is the pitcher. And he whistles over to his son and tells him to throw it, Arlo. Mac, Foster, and Rabbit are eating some snacks in the stands. And then Foster goes over to the concession stand where he sees Ursula. They have a little conversation there, and she basically kind of blows him off, trying to ask her out. And then as he sits back down, Foster has sent over a giant cotton candy over to Officer Rando. The guy behind him tells him to move that gigantic cotton candy. Rando turns around and smashes it on the guy's head and says, "How's the view from Sugar Heaven, bitch?" I love this line. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
Is this your favorite line in the movie? Because you've been quoting it pretty heavily.
It might be my favorite line, yeah.
This is your line? Yeah. This is something I've always wanted to do this to somebody because, one, that amount of cotton candy is just unearthly. Like, I've never seen it that big. Like, yeah. Right? I mean, that's a massive amount of cotton candy. Like, that's a Golden Girls amount of cotton candy.
Let me ask you this. Do you think you could actually eat that entire giant cotton candy?
See, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shut you down right now because cotton candy actually just melts in your mouth like no one's business.
Yeah, but you're going to have to relax the jaw. Remember to cuff the balls.
There you go. Bringing it back full circle.
Foster is visiting Ursula next at the Spurberry Police Office. She tells Foster that she usually doesn't date cops. Foster says, "Well, I'm not really much of a cop." And then we see Mac and Foster driving next, and they screw with Farva by having him check the plates on a Spurberry police officer. The cops pull up next to the truck, who's missed the way station. Foster tells Mac he wants to play it straight. Mac's like, "Okay, well, we'll see what happens." And he goes out and they start doing the repeater game against Foster's wishes. The truck driver tells him to go ahead and hop in the back and check out the cargo. So they enter. He slams the door shut. And our Mac is still doing the repeater of the Foster as the screen goes black. As we hear Foster say, "It is time to stop now." Screen goes black. It says 2 hours later. Thorny opens the door and enters. Says, "Stinks like sex in here. What happened?" Foster says they got a little distracted doing the repeater. Thorny says, "That'll happen. Next time, guys, just remember, pull your head out of each other's asses." Foster says, "Well, that's easy for you to say. You know, he's got a tiny little head." He points at Rabbit. Thorny checks the boxes out. They think it's just soap, but they uncover a whole box of marijuana with the Johnny Chimpo logo on it. JD, what do you think of this scene here?
So this is a heavy scene. We are unloading and unpacking a lot there. I noticed you did a lot of talking.
I sure did.
Congratulations. I'm very proud of you. It was good. We see the return of Johnny Chimpo. One of my favorite lines is his response to "We got caught doing the repeater," and just, "That'll happen." That line works wonders in any situation. Like, if you get in trouble at work and your boss is like, "Oh, you didn't send out this memo." Just, "That'll happen." It applies to everything. It's a great line. Try it sometime.
We will. And next, we've got Rabbit telling Chief O'Hagan that he's got a theory about Johnny Chimpo. It was the same tattoo the dead girl had in the Winnebago. Foster explains who Johnny Chimpo is next to O'Hagan. O'Hagan says, so the monkey has a butler? Is that what they do in Afghanistan, Thorny? Thorny laughs and says, how would I know? The guys are posing next with the giant bricks of pot, and the mayor comes to take a photo with the guys for the local newspaper. I don't have a lot to add other than I like the part where he requests the rifle so he can do the ch-ch and pose for the photo. What'd you think of that scene?
Yeah, I love the way he wants a gun. Let me get a gun. What is I don't know exactly the line, but he definitely wants a gun to make the picture with stacks of weed look all that much more badass, which I think is a problem that a lot of people currently have with social media. It's like, hey, how can I get my profile picture to look good? Wait, somebody give me a gun.
Thorny and Rabbit are driving next. They pull over a car. Thorn's son is in the back seat, so he has Rabbit take this one. Rabbit looks into the car and finds a couple, and the woman is scantily dressed, and they both have foreign accents here. Rabbit, he asks them, you know, why did I pull you over? And the driver says, oh, we were driving way too fast. They offer to do something for him to maybe make this go away, and the woman suggests maybe some spanking and cuffing might be in order. Farva radios in that Porsche is hot, so Thorny comes to break it up, and Rabbit and the woman are making out on the hood of the car. Thorny tells him that, you know, any other day he'd step in and show him how to swing, but that car's stolen, you gotta do your job. So they cuff the couple, and they put him in the car, and Thorny tells Arlo to climb up on Uncle Rabbit's lap, and Rabbit tells him that's not such a good idea. What'd you think of this scene here with the foreigners?
So there's two parts of the scene that I definitely did not understand or pick up on when I saw this movie when I was younger. And that being Thorny stepping up and saying, any other day I'd show you how to swing.
I definitely didn't catch that either.
I did not understand that when I was, 15 when this came out. I was like, oh, because he's going to swing a bat or something like that. I have no idea what I thought, but now rewatching it, it's some pretty good adult humor that's sort of strewn in there. And then the same with Rabbit having an obvious boner. I thought he was just uncomfortable not wanting to have someone else's child in his lap, because I would be the same way. Like, isn't that seems illegal? Oh, but it's double illegal. It's double illegal because Rabbit. I can't even say it without laughing. It's double illegal because Rabbit has a boner.
Yeah. It's a good scene. Now the next part here, we've got Officer Smy coming out of the bathroom. He says, Ursula, the fuck, we're out of teepee for the bathroom. What about the piece stuck to your shoe? What about the piece stuck to my shoe? Shit. And he looks down, he's got the toilet paper on his shoe. Smy is such a douche here. What did you think of this scene here?
All of the Spurberry cops are douches. Even Ursula's kind of an asshole, but like, there's no camaraderie at all between them. They're just like, you just hate them all.
Yeah. I did like the ending of the scene here where Smy's like, you know, you're my wife, I'd take you down a peg or two. And then he leaves and Foster's sitting there, had no idea Foster was even there. He's like, you know, if you were my wife, I'd massage your feet every night until you fell asleep. He's such a creep.
And creepers are awesome. Creep too.
O'Hagan and Chief Grady are talking in the next room. O'Hagan is telling Grady about the Johnny Chimpo theory. Grady tells O'Hagan that desperation is a stinky cologne. And he tells him, you know, when you guys get shut down, come back and see me. I could always use a good meter maid. So Rabbit is in a stolen car next. He's got a wig on. He's going to try and pull a prank like Mac did earlier in the film here. We cut to Farva, who's filling up his car with gasoline. On the pump, it says free hot dog with every 10-gallon purchase. So he tries to top off his car, but it stops at 9.1 gallons. So he just pumps the gas right into the garbage can and then comes walking out of the gas station with a hot dog next. That cracked me up, just being, you know, a fat guy. Like, you know, the lengths that he went to get that $1 hot dog was pretty awesome.
Well, it always bothers me because I think that if you do the math, he spends more money wasting the gas than if he had just walked his fat ass in there and paid money for the hot dog.
But think of it like this. What's better, a free hot dog or a hot dog you have to pay for?
Yeah, but he threw away money to get the free hot dog.
I know, but you got to put in the mindset, though. He didn't have to pay for the hot dog. It was free.
No, I understand what you're doing, but you're wrong, and you're an asshole, and I hate you for it.
So Mac is beating off in the next scene here, using his radar gun to see how fast he's going. And Rabbit comes flying by at 113 miles an hour. Mac has to give chase, and he's pissed because he didn't get to finish. As Rabbit goes down the road here, Farva comes out of nowhere and cuts him off, gets out of his car and says, "Get out of the car, scumbag!" But he's really excited when he finds out it's Rabbit inside. Next, Thorn and his girlfriend are about to swing with the foreign couple they arrested. Thorn comes into the room and says, "Who wants a mustache ride?" And the couple say they both do. So both the guy and the woman would like to ride the mustache. As he says, what'd you think of that scene?
I think that this is a big scene that I also didn't understand the first time I saw this movie. Like, I knew that it was a sexual scene, but I didn't necessarily know the intricacies of, I don't even know the correct terms for what you would call Thorny and his girl's relationship. Just open? I don't know.
Yeah, seems to be pretty open.
But, you know, I'm really glad that Thorny made friends with him. And her, the woman, and that his girl is totally game. Thorny is horny. and props to him for being open and looking to give mustache rides to any gender.
Yeah, sure.
Because that's what's implied here is that,
oh yeah, you know, for sure.
Horny Thorny is giving mustache rides to both sides of the pube rack.
Not only that, but at one point the foreign girl like points to the guy and he gets down on all fours. I was just like, okay, well.
Oh yeah,
clearly, there's a cut scene here that probably involves a prosthetic being put on her for him, but we'll just pause at that.
Hey, so, we can probably say that there's a 90-minute like sub sequel that just involves this bedroom scene, and it's probably fantastic.
Yeah, who would want to see that? I mean, what? So next, we've got a clip of Foster pranking Ursula. Let's take a listen here.
Spray by police.
Oh, thank the Lord. Oh, thank the Lord. It's terrible. There's a disgusting pervert flashing people.
Ma'am, I need you to calm down.
I can't calm down. You calm down. Oh, my God.
Ma'am, tell me your location.
It's right in front of the building on 323 Karuna Street.
That's this address, ma'am.
Oh, well, then maybe you can see him. He's right in front of the building. Go look. I'll hold. Did you see him? Oh, he's disgusting.
He certainly is, ma'am.
Oh, I think he's going to the window again.
Oh, the humanity. He's all bulgy. He's like a moose. Oh, no. I think he's going back again.
Freeze, motherfucker.
Oh, God. Please don't shoot me. I'm naked.
Drop your coat and grab your toes.
What?
I'm gonna show you where the wild goose goes.
Oh, this isn't happening. I'm a police officer. Ursula, help!
Baby, I'm gonna butter your bread.
So, JD, what'd you think of this scene here with Foster and Ursula?
I want there to be a cut scene where we see him sitting alone in his apartment and he's like really contemplating like, yeah, I want to prank Ursula, but I don't know what to do. And then in the corner, his trench coat catches his eye and he's like, I wonder. And then he puts it on and he rushes out into the building and, you know, he goes through all of this. And then I want to see the emotional just downfall of when he thinks, oh my goodness, I'm about to get raped on this street corner. This is my life.
And you got to give it to Foster because it really works. So in the next scene here, him and Ursula are making out and they've made their way into the confiscated Winnebago. Foster sits on the bed and Ursula jumps on him and the bed breaks. Foster says, baby, you rocked me. And they look under the bed and they find bags of pot. What do you think of the nice discovery here of the drugs?
It's a great plot point that they bring in a pretty organic way. Like, it's not super on the nose, like an episode of Scooby-Doo where, you know, Fred would be like, maybe we should go back and interrogate that old carnival worker. It's like, no, you know.
Zoink, Scoob!
Sorry. You know, they find a way to get to the trailer for their own individual means, and then through a series of dramatic irony, stumble upon a shit ton of drugs.
Yeah. O'Hagan is yelling at Rabbit in the next scene. He tells him, "You're off the road. Farva, you're back on." Farva says, "Good move, Cap." Foster enters next with a duffel bag, and he pulls out the pot and then starts to tell an elaborate story about how he was just walking over by the police station. He scaled the fence, jimmied the door to the Winnebago, broke the bed, and found the drugs, all just on a hunch here. Of course, nobody believes him, and O'Hagan says, "I'll believe that when me shit turns purple and smells like rainbow sherbet." Foster says, "It must have been my sixth, maybe even my seventh sense, and, you know, that's why I broke in." He's telling that to Rabbit, who O'Hagan says, "Rabbit, don't listen to him." O'Hagan tells Farva next to remember what they talked about, and Farva says, "Yes, take 10 deep breaths before he gets back out on the road." JD, what do you think of the Foster story of finding the drugs?
It creates a good parallel between what actually happened and, you know, what he tells as his bullshit story. And in that regard, because it I think is almost like a meta testament to the screenwriting abilities of the team to be like, you know, we can create an organic way to find the drugs. And then they use his bullshit story to cover it up, as opposed to the other way around, where somebody lazy could have just been like, "Oh, you know, here's Foster walking down the street and he catches a whiff of marijuana," or some bullshit like that. Like, I really appreciate what they did to set this up.
Yeah. And Foster and Ursula are back at it in the next scene here. They're making out in the front seat of his cop car. They go into the back seat, though, because Ursula says the steering wheel was jabbing her in the ass. They start going at it, and then she stops and says, "Hey, Foster, in our cruiser, someone has to let you out of the backseat." Ah, fuck it. They just continue to go at it. Next, we have Thorny trying to convince Mac and Foster to switch partners. Farva enters and says, "All right, assholes, quit talking about me." Thorny says, "Nobody was talking about you, you big idiot." Foster and Mac contemplate trying to play it straight, or if they want to do a game, or go undercover. And they end up getting into a truck, and they're all dressed up like truck drivers. But they can't get the truck to work because neither one of them know how to drive a stick. JD, what do you think of these scenes here?
I feel like that's sort of like a lot of the great trials and tribulations that cops get to go through. And I'm always curious to like what happens when you're like, okay, we're going to go undercover. Hey, does a bigger precinct be like, anybody have truck driving experience? Or do they just throw caution in the wind and just be like, best of luck to you? Because I love watching them in that scene, and they get into the truck and the music picks up a little bit. And
yeah. It's such idea to put it into first gear.
Yeah. And it's like, I would think I would have that idiotic impression where I'm like, dude, let's just jump into the truck and let's go undercover. And then I would just go home and watch Netflix for the rest of the day because I couldn't figure out how to make a truck work. Do you know how to – can you drive a truck? Do you have a license for that?
No, what is your licensure look like? I cannot drive a stick either, so that would have happened to me as well.
You can't drive a stick at all?
No.
I learned how to drive a stick in high school when I was working at a movie theater, and we had really, really down times in between movies. And so, like, that's – I don't know, like, you've got like a 2-hour block of nothing. So it'd be like, hey, let's go drive donuts in the parking lot. And I'm like, I can't drive stick. And someone's like, I'll teach you. And that's how I learned how to drive stick.
That's awesome. Yeah, my dad tried to teach me. I just couldn't get it. Wasn't capable.
Not a stick man.
I'm a stick man. Wasn't a stick man, though. Thorny and Farva have a minivan pulled over next. Farva wants to pop a couple Viagra and issue tickets with raging hard boners. Thorny's not having it. Farva says, hey, you know, we should be called Car Ramrod. And then Thorny gets a call, and Farva's trying to get him to say it. And Thorny hangs up without saying Car Ramrod. He's like, hey, man, I wrote it on the paper. He's like, oh, sorry. He wants to know what game they're playing. Thorny's like, no game, man. I'm telling you, just we're going to play it straight. Farva says, all right, for $20, I'll call the guy a chicken fucker. Farfa puts on his hat, gets out of the car, and runs toward the driver's side door, and says, "License and registration, chicken fucker! A cock!" And if you heard in our interesting facts, the couple in the minivan are the parents of Kevin Heffernan, Farva, and they were really taken back by the vulgar language, and it caught them off guard. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
Well, my first question to you is on the topic of have you ever taken a Viagra?
Oh, yeah. That's a fun time.
Interesting.
I got a whole bottle. I mean, what?
On a total side note, we, in college, I don't want to name names. Somebody had gotten their hands on some Viagra.
Rick, what?
And it was during, I want to say finals, my senior year, possibly spring semester. So it was like the end of the end. Like, let's just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And I used to concoct this energy drink. I don't know if I ever made this for you or anything, but it had a lot of some legal, some illegal elements in it. And my roommate at the time he's like, "Hey, can you make me that energy drink? I need to stay up all night and study."
Yeah.
And I was hanging out with this person that we shall not name.
Right.
And he was like, "Hey, how about you drop this pill in there?" And we dropped a Viagra in there.
And?
And thank goodness I did not see the person that drank the drink for the rest of the night, because I think that would just be way odd to be like totally torqued and then torqued. Like, he was probably bouncing off the walls and poking holes through the drywall.
Okay. Real quick, what all did you put in the energy drink minus the dick pill?
Is this on the record or off the record?
On the record. Yeah, share it.
Okay, so it was
now.
Well, it was Mountain Dew.
Okay.
Mountain Dew was the base. Good. 2 Tylenol crushed up, mixed in.
Okay.
A scoop of creatine.
Okay, gotta have the protein.
A milliliter of Deca. There's your illegal.
Yep.
And you mix that all up and you've got an energy surge that'll last you about 6 hours.
Damn. Yeah, I was not in on that. I wish I would have been. Okay. O'Hagan calls Grady in the next scene, and Grady says he's got Bobby the baboon in lockup, and he said for 20 bananas, he'll provide us the information we need to get this Johnny Chimpo. O'Hagan, of course, is not happy about his comments here. What do you think of the line from Grady, though? I thought this was funny.
The Bobby the baboon?
Yeah, Bobby the baboon and 20 bananas. I mean, he's normally a douche, but this was kind of funny.
I mean, if you think monkey jokes are funny, I mean...
Who doesn't?
No, I mean, but his delivery is good with it because he gives it with such, like... His whole delivery in this is just so, like, condescending and looking down at the Johnny Chimpo theory that it is actually really funny. The way that Grady delivers the line is, like, really similar to the way that he deals with Francis in all of those episodes in Malcolm in the Middle, where he's just, like, beating you down with his words. Like, he is better than you.
I love that he's from Malcolm in the Middle. That surprised me. I didn't put the two and two together. Let's listen to a clip next. We've got Farva, and he's ordering some food here from the burger place.
Welcome to Dippus. Can I take your order?
Give me a double bacon cheeseburger.
Double bacon cheeseburger? It's for a cop.
Roger.
What the hell's that all about? You gonna spin it now?
No, I was just telling him that so he makes it good. Don't spit in that cop's burger.
Yeah, thanks.
Roger. Holding the spit.
Give me a pie. Apple.
Do you want me to hold the spit?
Just kidding, officer. Farva.
So, do you want to dip a size your meal for a quarter more?
Want me to punch a size your face for free?
Some male figure. I'm his dad. And stop with the whole transfer thing. Christ. You know what? I gotta go. Let's talk about this later, okay? Okay, bye.
Now, don't give me any lip.
It's just a quarter, and look how much more you get.
I said no!
It's just 25 cents.
Hey, listen, guy. He doesn't want it. I can handle this, Ramathorn. I don't want it!
Right. Beverage?
Give me a liter of cola.
A what?
A liter of cola.
Liter of cola? Do we make liter of cola?
Will you just order a large farva? I don't want a large farva. I want a goddamn liter of cola.
I don't know what that is.
Liter is French. Forgive me some fucking cola before I break Moose's fucking lip.
All right, relax.
All right, JD, what do you think of Farva and his liter of cola?
It's hard to, like, pick out, like, a favorite line from this scene.
Like, it's, so many good ones.
There's the jokes are, like, their goal is a joke every 6 seconds. They're punching out at, like, every 2 seconds here. It's, like, quote after joke after quote after joke. But large Farva gets me every time. And anytime anybody orders a large of anything, you know, like, let me get a large tuna. Oh, fantastic. Large Farva. I don't want a large Farva. It's so perfect.
Liter of cola.
Let me get it. I don't want a liter of cola. Have you done that? I guarantee you've gone to a restaurant or fast food joint at one point in your life and ordered liter of cola.
I haven't done the liter of cola, but I think I might start doing the pie. I thought that was the surprising line for me that I really laughed at. He's like, let me get a pie, apple.
Yeah, I love that he clarifies it. Pie, apple.
Yeah, that and the other guy on the headset after he says, hold the spit, he goes, Roger that, holding the spit. Like, those two things I kind of picked up on for the first time. So that's why I love doing this podcast, because you get to really, like, break it down. And you catch some of those, like, subtle humor points that they add in there.
Yeah, and for those of you that are listening, and if this is your first Super Troopers foray, or if this is a repeater for you, like, tweet at us, show us your love. Like, what lines are you picking up on? What are some, like, new comedic elements that you didn't necessarily pick up on? Like, Kyle had a whole new experience. Pie, apple. So great. I love that line.
I love it. Farva and Thorny are sitting down to eat. Farva looks at his burger and says, that look like spit to you? Yeah. Well, fuck it. I'm about to win $1 million anyway. He pulls the sticker off of his soda to see if he's a winner. And they popped a hole in his soda, so it starts pouring out all over him. Farva gets pissed and leaps across the counter, attacking the guy that took his order. What'd you think of that part of the scene?
So this is definitely a scene that, like, I've taken and have applied to my life. To anybody that I ever order food from in a restaurant, if you spit on it, screw it. I don't want to know. I'm sure I've had food spat on before, but as long as I don't know about it, I'm with Farva.
Yeah, fuck it. Fuck it. At the Spurberry Police Station next, Farva is getting hosed down and also powdered with sugar. Grady wants to know what his plans are after they get shut down. Farva says they aren't getting shut down. Grady wants to bring him on to work as a local cop, and he also wants to know their side of the investigation. And Farva doesn't cave. He says he's all state patrol. He's all highway. What'd you think of this scene? Farva's naked ass. And I thought they were putting baby powder on him. But then Farva licks it and goes, powdered sugar. It's delicious.
Another one of my favorite lines. Anytime I eat powdered sugar and anything, like if I go out for breakfast, you get some French toast or some pancakes. And somebody's like, hey, how's your meal? It's powdered sugar. It's delicious. Like, I don't know, like that line haunts me. And all, as does his naked ass. Like, his rear end is not much to look at. He's like a Louis C.K. He just does not have an ass.
Sadly, I share a resemblance to his ass. I also, you could roll a quarter down my back and hit me in the back of the heel.
Thankfully, Kyle, I have never known that about you.
Eh, what can you do?
I'm pert and perky, personally.
In the next scene here, the guys are getting high and watching Johnny Chimpo. We cut to Farva and O'Hagan, and they're watching the surveillance tapes of Farva beating up the burger restaurant employees. O'Hagan tells him, that's it, you're off the road, never again. O'Hagan is talking with Mac and Foster and Thorny next. They keep talking about how their shenanigans are always funny. And O'Hagan says, I swear to God, the next person that says shenanigans, I'm going to pistol whip him. Mac yells, hey, Farva, what's the name of that restaurant, you know, with all the goofy shit on the wall and the mozzarella sticks? Farva pokes his head out from behind the door and says, ah, shenanigans. You're talking about shenanigans, right? Mac holds out his pistol, and O'Hagan is pissed off and just storms out of the room. What do you think of this scene here with the shenanigans?
I actually recently won a bar bet between somebody, and they were the word shenanigans came up, and the person thought that shenanigans was the bar from Office Space. And I was like, no, shenanigans was the restaurant in Super Troopers that caused Farva to get pistol whipped.
Okay, what is the one from Office Space? That does sound familiar, because I remember all the flair.
The tchotchkes.
Tchotchkes. So Foster and Ursula meet next for dinner. They're dressed in kind of undercover. Ursula dressed up like a biker chick, and Foster dressed up like Lance Armstrong. He says, oh, biker outfit, I get it. Ursula and Foster put together a plan to get the drugs out of the Winnebago, and she tells him she's going to help him out with it all. What do you think of this scene? I thought that was the humor here, the subtle biker chick outfit, and then Foster dressed like he's about to do the Tour de France. That made me laugh pretty hard.
There's a lot of thoughtfulness that goes into the comedy that's both, you know, on the head, some of it's slapstick, some of it's just offbeat. But this is another scene where I want to see Foster alone in his apartment, looking at his closet and debating, okay, we're going as bikers. I've got leather chaps and a leather jacket and a mullet. Or I've got these tights and a yellow helmet. She definitely means Tour de France. I want to see that scene. Like, there's like a whole sub-movie of Foster making bad, poorly informed decisions.
I know. I'm excited to see what they do in the sequel. That's the fun thing about this. We got all these questions. We're going to have them answer in like 4 days. Like, where do these guys go from here? I can't wait. Now, at the gun range next, Mac comes out wearing only a metal cup. He asks Thorny how his shooting's been this morning. Thorn holds up his target and says, dead on all morning. Now, what about that little guy? And there's one shot up in the neck area. And Thorn says, I wouldn't worry about that little guy. So Mac goes out about 20 yards, gives him the thumbs up, and Thorn shoots him right in the cup. And Mac goes flying backwards about 10 feet, and then he gets up and Thorn shoots him again. What'd you think of this scene? I love the ending where O'Hagan comes in and fires the gun, and it blows out the window, and he's just like, you know, in my time, we used rubber bullets. You guys are sick.
I have two, like, divergent thoughts on this. One, the fact that they are just, like, sadists and masochists are just, like, it's like Seinfeld. Like, they're just a group of people that exists only to shit on and fuck with anybody and everybody and themselves. Like, it never occurs to them to use rubber bullets. Like, they are just sociopaths, right?
Yeah. It's a good word.
Yeah, I mean, like, realistically, like, somehow this highway patrol division has found this select group of just mentally disturbed individuals, and they don't care, nor do they do their job, but they really thoroughly do enjoy it. My second point that I want to make is, it's another line, you know, what about this one? Oh, that guy? Don't worry about that guy. Like, that's another line that needs to apply to, like, at any time in life. Like, anytime you screw up on something, whether it be personally or at work, professionally, like, hey, what happened with so-and-so? Oh, that? Nah, don't worry about that. That works. That mentality of don't worry about that, apply that to your lives. That's the Super Trooper mantra. It'll get you places. There's philosophy in this movie.
Definitely. At the Spurberry police station next, Smy and Burke are getting call after call. They finally leave the station unattended, and Foster and Thorn enter the compound area. Foster finds a hidden key, and Thorn says, no offense, Foster, but when did you become a real cop? We cut to the wooded area where we see the Spurberry cops are watching Rabbit, who's dressed up and humping a fake bear from behind. We cut back to the party. Farva enters. Mac tried to tell him the wrong location, but Farva is too excited to even care because it's open bar, man. He goes over to the bar and orders 6 beers. Cut back to Rabbit, who's still going at it with the bear. Smy gets on the intercom and says, do you need any assistance? Excuse me, bear fucker, do you need my assistance? He puts down the intercom and grabs a rifle and goes to take out the bear. And of course, Rabbit sees the gun and takes off running. Then we have a montage next of Foster, Thorn driving the Winnebago, Farva drinking beer after beer, Rabbit running away in his outfit, and eventually Foster and Thorn pull up to this party or gathering of all these big politicians, and they get out duffel bags, which they believe have marijuana in them. They enter the hall, only to see Chief Grady with a mountain of pot stacked up behind him, and he's giving this speech, and they're going to have to close down the highway patrol after missing out on this drug bust. Foster confronts Ursula, and he thinks that she gave away the location of the drugs and picked him because he could be manipulated. What do you think of this scene here?
So you said a lot of words. Once again, you definitely trail through like a large chunk of a scene, which is fine because it moves really fast. So props to, you know, the direction of this film. And I love the way that the transitions happen. They do those sort of like cutaways and breakaways and split screens, which are really fun. He tries to order Schlitz. I have no idea what Schlitz is. I've never even had a Schlitz, but, you know, Farva's dead set on getting him some Schlitz. So another pro tip to anybody that's, you know, maybe a little bit younger, maybe you're going into your 21st and then beyond open bar, you just take whatever you can get and as much of it as you can get. And right. I think Farva's a testament to how great an open bar can be when you're ordering six beers at a time. Are you a beer fan, Kyle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really? I like a good beer.
I hate beer.
I like a Liney Google Summer Shandy. That's good. I'm a Blue Moon type of guy with a nice like orange peel in there.
Is that you go to a bar, you go to a nice dinner with the missus, you sit down, you're going to order a Blue Moon. That's your thing.
Yeah, I'd probably order a Blue Moon, or if they don't have that, like a Miller Lite draft. Now, if I'm out and I've got free bar, I am Captain and Coke all day long.
Okay. See, that's smart. So to, you know, word to the wise, you need to have a drink of choice. There needs to be a go-to. You need to be prepared for the open bar.
I agree. No, that's good. Good advice there. So we cut to the highway patrol office. The guys are drinking. Foster and Mac are arguing about Ursula. Foster's defending her. O'Hagan enters with a big bottle of alcohol, and he says, "Foster, she played you. It's called a honeypot." He makes Foster and Mac shake hands because they're friends. O'Hagan pours some shots, and they toast to the death of fun. They hear a noise coming from the back room. They enter the locker room, and they find Farva, and he's dressed as a local cop, Spurberry policeman. Thorne says, "You ratted us out to Grady, didn't you?" Farva says he's not going to even dignify a response, and he leaves the locker room, and when he enters again, they kind of jump him, and in the next scene, we see him tied up to a toilet and gagged. JD, what'd you think of that first part of this scene here with finding out that Farva's the one that ratted him out?
For as much prop and praise that I've given them for the writing of this movie and the direction of this movie, this is a very lazy scene, in my opinion. Like, why would Farva go back to his station to change into his other cop outfit? Like, why wouldn't he just go home? Why wouldn't he go, like, any number of other things? Like, why would he be where he is? It's just way too convenient. And it always bothers me.
Okay, that's a really good point. Yeah, I think that's good. We're not just going to sing all their praises. So, yeah, this did feel a little lazy now that you pointed out like that. Now, in the next part of the scene here, they are in the cop car and they're driving. They pull up to the burger joint, and Mac, in his best Rod Farva voice, says, "Give me a liter of cola. This is Officer Rod Farva." And the kid that had gotten beaten up before runs out the back door of the burger place. In the next scene here, O'Hagan goes up to a car that they've pulled over and asks for license and registration, and then starts taking a piss. Says, when you gotta go, you gotta go. Foster calls Ursula on the police comm. He apologizes for blaming her for everything. She says, "Do you want to get back at these guys?" And she tells him to meet her at 10:30 on Okeechobee Road. In the next scene here, she's running late. And they see Gallicanocus pass in his truck. Farva cuts them off as they start to give chase, makes them get out of the car. Eventually, Farva starts crying because he feels guilty for screwing them over. He tries to give Thorne a hug, who kind of pushes him off. But Thorne tells him, hey man, this is your big chance. If we get this wrong, no big deal. But if we get it right, you get to be the hero. Come on, man. Team Ramrod. So they get Farva back on their side. What'd you think of this scene?
This is a great opportunity to like really establish some character arc to Farva, who we've seen him as an asshole, and we've seen many different shades and many different sides and avenues of just how annoying and horrible freaking Farva is. Like, seriously, like, I believe the phrase is take him out back and beat him with a rubber hose.
Yes.
I mean, that's what everybody wants to do with him, but he does buckle, and he has some semblance of wanting to remain loyal to his friends that he's built camaraderie with, which I think the Spurberry police don't necessarily have, and he'll never get from them. He wants to go back to his old girlfriend.
Next, we see cops show up with Gallicanocus. Grady goes over and hugs him and then shakes Gallicanocus's hand. There's another guy there wearing like a Canadian hat. Thorne says the local cops are running interference.
I'm sorry, a Canadian hat?
What the hell do you call that thing?
That's why I'm stopping you and wanting you to clarify. Unless the hat says a mate or a bro or whatever.
I don't know what to call the hat other than it looks very Canadian. And I realize that may piss off our Canadian listeners, but we don't run around wearing tall furry hats.
Nor do we care about our Canadian listeners.
Hey, come on.
Hey
guys, we're sorry about that.
It won't happen again. Sorry about that.
Ursula finally enters and she wants to know if they're drunk. She says, no offense, but you know, the less you guys knew about this whole thing, the less you could screw it up. They're all like, oh, yeah, good point. She said that's why she had led them to the Winnebago. Mac accuses her of using Foster, and she agrees that she did initially, but that she really likes him. They kind of have a nice little moment there. They go over to the vehicles. There's no guns, but they did find a blow-up doll. And on the blow-up doll, it says Ursula, and it belongs to Farva. Kind of weird. Farva says, hey, that's my car in the next scene. They see Ursula, the blow-up doll, on top of it. And as they pass, there's nobody in the car, but the trunk opens up. All the guys jump out, and they start knocking out the Spurberry cops. O'Hagan and Grady go back and forth a little bit, but O'Hagan gets the best of him, knocking him down and then kicking him. He says, two-time Navy champ. Tag him and bag him, boys. JD, what'd you think of the fight scene here with the guys taking out the Spurberry police and the lone Canadian from the airplane?
It's great to see O'Hagan get his hands dirty and really prove why he's the top dog here. I'm like, am I the only one happy to see Brian Cox finally kick ass?
Oh, absolutely. I thought that was a great scene.
And Grady's had it coming this entire movie, and he finally gets it. It's great to see them come out on top. They're the underdogs in many, you know, shapes and forms. I don't know many other professions that involve with fisticuffs in your rival, but apparently when you're a cop, you get into airport brawls.
Next day, they arrive at O'Hagan's house, and let's listen to a clip here as they find out the news of if their precinct is going to be brought back.
Dear John, congratulations are due to you and your men for your brave, impressive, but most of all, unorthodox tactics in thwarting the drug smuggling ring and extreme police corruption.
Ooh, all right. She loves us.
I cannot stress enough how proud we at the State House are of you. The great state of Vermont could use more officers like your men.
Uh-huh.
As you requested, we have reevaluated the financial situation regarding your unit.
And we're going to buy you a tank.
Due to our tight fiscal situation, we regret to inform you that we are still going to have to close your station. Good luck in Sherbourne, John. And give your men my best. Sincerely, Governor Fuckhead.
What'd you think of this scene here? Obviously, it's bummer news, but I like the Governor Fuckhead comment at the end.
Yeah, it's, they, again, 6 seconds of, every 6 seconds we're looking at comedy. Like, we're trying to infuse every serious moment with some sort of laugh track, and it is dramatic. It is traumatic. You think, like, we've got our underdogs and we're elevating them to glory only to kick them back down to their knees. Like, that's, it's so bittersweet. And at the, you know, this moment in the movie, you're kind of like, oh, like,
yeah, no happy ending here.
Yeah. It's just, it sucks. We've just spent 90 minutes with a group of people that we're cheering and applauding and happy for, and we've seen them victorious, and Governor Fuckhead fucks him.
Yeah, so 3 months later, flashes across the screen. Thorne and Rabbit arrive at a party, but this time they're not as cops. They're driving a beer truck, and they bring a keg up to the party. They knock on the door, and the college boy from earlier answers the door, and he says, oh, no. He goes, aren't you guys the highway patrol guys? I said, yeah, we used to be, but now we're working here. College boy number two comes running down the stairs, and he also freaks out when he sees them. But the college boy number one explains, hey man, they're not cops anymore. They're just working for this beer company. Rabbit and Thorne move the keg all over the house, giving them shit. Just, hey, I like it better over here. Nah, let's move it back over there. After the third time, Thorne says, all right, someone needs a sign for this, and I need to see some ID. College boy number two says, well, my friend Abraham Lincoln says I'm 21, and he never told a lie. Thorne corrects him and says that was George Washington, actually, that never told a lie. Thorne looks at Rabbit and says, are you ready for the fun part? And he pulls off the outfit and reveals that they are now Spurberry policemen. And the party scatters. All the other guys enter. College boy number three, the one from the back seat earlier, comes running out of the closet and says, I love acid! And the credits start to roll. And we have some montages of here of the guys doing some drinking games and just kind of messing with the college boys. JD, final thoughts on the ending here?
It's a great outro, and it, you know, looking at the trauma and the pain of the last scene and then building it up in a surprising fashion, like, I was not expecting or anticipating it. And in all honesty, I kind of forgot that this scene existed. And it's like, well, obviously, we always have to reference The Office because we do, but it's like that scene when, obviously, Super Troopers comes before The Office, but for topical reasons, when Andy Bernard and David Wallace rebuy Dunder Mifflin and he pretends to be the drunkard janitor to humiliate himself and then, you know, give himself a platform for triumph. And that's it, this is such a great, like, send off for them in this movie that shenanigans always win. That's the lesson of this movie. Shenanigans always win. Always. Tell me a time shenanigans don't win.
Ah, you're right, man. The shenanigans are always victorious. Can't argue it.
Hey, you're damn right. I'm pounding my fist right now.
Now that we've finished Super Troopers, let's talk a little bit about Super Troopers 2. So now that you've rewatched it, where do you think they take the story in the sequel?
Admittedly, I have not watched the trailer. And for those regular listeners or anybody new, I'm not a fan of watching trailers before I view a movie. I like to come in fresh. I like to come in uncorrupted. I don't want any spoilers. I don't want anything. I want to view a movie as a virgin. So I have no idea what to expect, but I did hop over to the IMDb page for Super Troopers 2 and was a little like miffed at looking at the cast list. I don't know. Have you seen some of the names that are on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't say anything to spoil to anybody that's maybe you're in my clique that you don't want to know anything, but I think this movie is going to play on a lot of the original concepts that the first came up with and established. It's going to give us a lot of nostalgia. It's going to bring back a lot of love and a lot of comedy that we've potentially grown up on with Super Troopers and with Broken Lizard, because, like, dude, once we can we do Club Dread soon? Club Dread, like, one of my favorite movies ever. Like, that's so effing good.
We have to do Club Dread. I think we have to do I Know What You Did Last Summer first, and then follow it with Club Dread.
Oh, that is a well. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna cut your midsection out, and I'm gonna say Club Dread's more of I Know What You Did Last Summer
two.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. So,
but so I think we'll
we plan it, we could do one and two, and then the sequel, part three, Club Dread.
I love that idea. Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
You're right on par. But no, I'm super excited for Super Troopers 2. I think it's gonna do fantastic. I mean, I don't think it's gonna break the box office, but it's gonna be a great movie, and I think it's gonna be a great movie in the regards that people of, you know, yours and my generation, and then it's gonna create great exposure for the younger generations that are gonna say, let me watch Super Troopers, the first one.
I think it's gonna do really well. Can I give you one tiny spoiler?
Is it that Jim Gaffigan is in it again?
No. The only spoiler I'll give you, this movie's going to take place in Canada. The casting that you're seeing is that's because they're from Canada.
So no, I read that in the log line, and okay. I thought it was super topical because we had Canadian bacon in the John Candy poll. And I'm picturing, or at least anticipating, there to be a lot of at least structural similarities between what it takes for them to go from Vermont to Canada, as it did to get John Candy and Alan Alda into Canada and Canadian bacon. So that's my mindset personally.
Well, hey, perfect transition. We're going to be back next week with Uncle Buck starring John Candy. The teaser trailer will be out on Monday. The full episode will be out on Wednesday. As always, please follow us on social media at Back in Time Pod. Our website is backintimepod.wordpress.com, and you can email us at backintimepodcast@gmail.com. Shoot us a message. Let us know what you want us to review next, and who knows, you might see it on the list of upcoming movies that we're going to cover. But that's it for today's episode. It's time to climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Listen to another episode of Back in Time Podcast right meow.
It means your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is whatever you make it. So make it a good one. Both of you.
We will, Doc.
Stand back.